And I'd like now to welcome to the program Joe Troggitt. He is curator of 20th century art at the New Mexico Museum of Art. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much for having me.
So it's great fun to have you in the cafe.
This is a treat.
Well, it is a treat. And I was over there at the George O'Keefe Museum yesterday, so I recorded that interview that our listeners just heard. And now here we are in the cafe talking about two exhibitions that are in the New Mexico Museum of Art right now. One is called It's About Time, 14,000 Years of Art in New Mexico. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard that number right. And another show called Back in the Saddle. So let's talk about, 14,000 years. Certainly it's only been New Mexico per se for 100 years. Is that right?
That's right.
But what do you have, what objects and how are they art, these objects that go back all these millennia?
Well, the New Mexico Museum of Art is the state art museum. And our mission is really to present the art of New Mexico, which really begins 14,000 years ago with the first New Mexicans, the Paleo Indians, who we know as the makers of Clovis points and Folsom points. And these are stone tools, but they're also works of art. And the exhibition continues through High Pueblo periods, through Spanish colonial, American colonial, and then to statehood, and the exhibition ends with contemporary art. It's a fast history of New Mexico told through the art that we have made.
So those early spear points, make the case of why those are art.
Well, they're art for two reasons. From the maker's point of view, they incorporated a whole series of high technology chipping processes that really went beyond what was minimally necessary to make a spear point. And so they aestheticized these objects when they made them. From our own 21st century perspective, 70 years ago, when these objects were found in the context of the bones of the animals they hunted, they became art for us that represents the totality of what Paleo-Indian people did. The knowledge that they had of the environment, their ability to exist with minimal technology, that gives us a kind of conceptual view of Paleo-Indians, which is really an artistic view as well.
And so you then go in the exhibition to some very early Pueblo pots, and there's a beautiful video of how the designs on these pots are constructed. It ends up being sort of an Escher-like positive-negative space kind of thing that I'd never really thought about looking at these.
Well, one of the things that we have done is to show the aesthetics of Pueblo pottery, ancestral Pueblo pottery, from roughly 900 to 1350. This material, if you look closely, incorporated designs and the absence of designs that were equal, and they flipped. And so these flipped equal designs we're calling isomers, iso equal, mer shape, equal shapes. But what's so interesting about these designs is when you look at them, they also flip back and forth, and the background becomes the foreground becomes the background. And the animation that we have shows how this flipping takes place and demonstrates very clearly that these two parts, the positive and the negative, in fact are equal.
Which probably has a tremendous amount to say about differences in visual thinking and in cultural thinking, and what you and I might think of as foreground and background really aren't foreground and background.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's so interesting is that we as literate people are used to seeing black shapes, letters, on clear backgrounds, on paper, and it's very difficult for us to see that kind of flipping and reversal because we have trained ourselves for so many years to see just the opposite.
Right.
But if you look at these Pueblo objects and allow your eyes to unfocus and slightly stare at the material, all of a sudden the reversal takes place and the background does become the foreground.
And if you think about a landscape, there is, not in a painting, yes, but in real life, especially if you're a hunter, there is no background.
Right.
It's all... Okay, so this is a, we're talking about the exhibition, It's About Time, 14,000 Years of Art in New Mexico. And so, I mean, you take us through the Spanish conquest and the mixing of the Spanish and Pueblo styles, which, if this exhibition is a, is an example, it's really hard to say where one begins and the other leaves off.
I think that's true. And what's so important, I think, about the exhibition is the way that it shows the fusions that have taken place across cultural divides between cultures over many, many millennia. And so that's one of the important points that this exhibition makes. It's an exhibition that was organized and supported by the New Mexico Humanities Council, in large part because, as a centennial project, it covered the whole of New Mexico art and not simply the last few years of our tradition.
So let's talk about, there's, I mean, in order to talk about everything, we're going to have to kind of skip a few things, but there are a lot of painters who were here in New Mexico who, first of all, I didn't even know were here, and who painted, famous American and European painters who did work here that wasn't the way we usually think about their work, like the modernist Stuart Davis, for example, or even some of the Bauman paintings are really surprising. And I was looking at this show yesterday and thinking, this is really one of the beautiful benefits that we have and that you as a curator have, to show us these treasures that never make it to New York or places like that.
Well, that's true. New York has a vision of art that is New York-centric, and New Mexico really has an incredible art tradition that is independent of that as well. When Stuart Davis came, he was used to painting in a studio, and he found the incredible light, the space, etc., to be very difficult. And so he responded in 1923 by abandoning color in his painting. And that's something that we find difficult to understand.
Really?
But he made these monochrome black to and gray and white paintings that allowed him to reconstruct the landscape as a painting and not simply copy what he was looking at. And similarly, Gustav Bauman, who we think of as a printmaker known for his color woodcuts, was also a painter. And he, in his paintings, began to abandon that ultra-simplicity that he found in the woodcuts and began to incorporate very decorative elements. And so his paintings look quite different from the woodcuts that we now identify as his mature style.
This exhibition, and I think a lot of things that have happened over the last couple of years, have been about the centennial. It's, well, now it's 101 years since New Mexico became a state. And there's that very famous painting by Gerald Cassidy, which is kind of an iconic painting in New Mexico and one of the premier objects in the museum. Tell us about that one.
Well, Cui Bono is a painting that so many people know and identify with the museum. The title, Cui Bono, is Latin for who benefits. And the painting was made in 1911, a year before statehood. And so the painting reflects the uncertainty that New Mexicans had over the political outcome of statehood. So will the Pueblos disappear? Who will become wealthy? How will we coexist as part of the United States in a formal sense? And so these kinds of uncertainties are wrapped up in this very iconic painting. And as an art historian and a curator, we continue to rethink that question of who benefits from the art of New Mexico in all of the projects that we do. And it's very important for us to aim our work at the general public. And one way that we're doing that with 14,000 years of New Mexico art is to take it on the road. And so we have a road version of the exhibition. It's a panelized photographic show called Art Across New Mexico.
Oh, so it's pictures of the, it's not the, you're not shipping the paintings, you're shipping pictures of the paintings.
Right, with the narratives that make it clear. And so this exhibition opens This week in Lee County at the Lovington, New Mexico, the Lee County Museum, and then it moves to Portales, to Tucumcari, to Farmington, Gallup, Clayton, Raton, Silver City, Las Cruces, and Las Vegas. So 11 venues throughout the state. So we're making this statewide project accessible to the entire state.
That is awesome. Now, one of the things you were talking about in the Gerald Cassidy painting, this question of what will happen to this state, and I always find it amazing, like when you think about, okay, that was 100 years ago, and nobody could probably imagine what this state would have was like 100 years later, and we cannot even begin to imagine what the state will be like 100 years from now.
That is so
true.
Some
of us shudder to think.
That is so true.
But one of the things that happened, and this in the years leading up to statehood, was this whole question of is Native American culture going to disappear? And a lot of anthropologists and painters really took on this issue in trying to, if not preserve them, at least keep documents of them.
Well, that's one of the the ironies of New Mexico culture, is that outsiders are always trying to interpret what we do here in the state. And we're always a little leery of that. But these painters came with their own set of values and somehow fused them with the kind of imagery that they found here. Sometimes the work became a little stereotyped and can be thought of as condescending, but that was not their goal. And similarly, we live in a very complex intercultural world, and New Mexico has maintained that sense of interculturality, and that's one of the wonders of New Mexico and why it's so important for us to support the art and the culture that we have here.
I was thinking when looking at those sort of, there's a whole section of the romanticizing of Pueblo people and all of that, and I thought, you know, what's life going to be like in 2113, and probably the only people who are going to be left is the Pueblos.
Well, that could be.
And I mean, that culture will survive.
And clearly, 100 years from now, people will be making romantic comments about the counterculture of the 1960s and 70s, you know. We become so blasé about what we are so familiar with in New Mexico. The perfect example of that is that in 1945, New Mexico really did change the world when the atomic bomb was invented here. It has both its positive and negative aspects. We're all happy to go down and have a CAT scan made, but we're not maybe so happy about the military impact of atomic energy. But New Mexico has changed the world, and we have a 13.5-foot wide blow-up of the original Trinity site nuclear explosion from July 16, 1945, and it's really an incredible experience to become really part of that explosion and see ourselves as part of that changing world.
Well, and as you pointed out, when I saw you in the museum yesterday, the exhibition kind of spans spear points to nuclear tests.
Yes. And what's, I think, important about that is that New Mexico is the only place in the world where our history of technological invention goes from stone tools, from spear points, to the invention of the atomic bomb. And within the exhibition, we have other works that were not made to be works of art, but now become works of art in the context of the museum. And a good example of that is one of Robert Goddard's experimental rocket motors that now looks like a primitive sculpture.
It does. It's very strange.
It's a wonderful piece. And then, in a more contemporary sense, I have James Parker's modern motorcycle that doesn't have a traditional front end. It doesn't have the bicycle twin forks that we all know. It has a front end that is held, the wheel is held from one side, and has a whole series of patents associated with it. And so this sense of invention and technological change is clearly a contemporary part of the museum as well.
We're talking to Joe Traugott about the exhibition It's About Time, 14,000 Years of Art in New Mexico, which runs until January of next year. And, I mean, so much more in it than we've even talked about. For example, Jerry West, our own wonderful painter Jerry West, has a tremendous painting of a Japanese internment camp. And what I didn't know was that his father and uncle were guards at this camp.
And so he, as a young boy, would go visit his father and uncle. And so now, as a senior artist in the community, he is revisiting some of those memories. And the painting is really a very powerful one, showing the detention camp, really the prison that was here in downtown Santa Fe.
So let's talk about the other show that is up. It's a smaller show. And very terrific, a couple of rooms called Back in the Saddle. Now, this is a show of horses, and it's a collaboration with the Institute of American Indian Arts Museum. Or what is it called now? SWIA.
It's
the exhibition. Have
to change
its name. Go ahead.
The exhibition, Back in the Saddle, was co-curated by John Torres-Nez, who is the executive director of SWIA, who puts on Indian Market every August. And the exhibition shows images of horses and horse-related material from Native American, from Hispanic, and European American artists. And both of us have written the commentary that goes along with these pieces. And the commentary really bridges our two points of view. So John brings a very political and culturally a clear perspective, and I bring a sort of social commentary as well as art historical perspective to these images.
I like that. I have to say, two different curators commenting on the same things. It takes away that sort of authoritative voice. It's just multiple voices, and then the viewer can have their own opinion.
Oh, always the case. I think it's very important for museum curators to express a point of view, but to leave open that sense of what things really do mean to the individual. And without having some narrative about this material and some point of view that expresses the clarity that there are so many perspectives about art in New Mexico, that we can confuse our tourist friends who come looking, expecting, well, maybe representational pictures of Native people, and finding everything from Agnes Martin to stone tools.
Right. Now, in the exhibition about horses, Back in the Saddle, we have a lot of, I mean, I think what happens is in the Southwest and in New Mexico, horse art can quickly go into romanticism and tourist art and things like that, and so that is part of the perspective that you have to deal with when you're curating a horse show.
Well, that's always the case with any kind of New Mexico subject. But John and I like to horse around, so we have, I think, brought that perspective to this exhibition as well.
Tell us about some of the pieces in it. What are some of your favorites?
Well, one of my true favorites is the earliest piece in the exhibition, which is a photograph by George Wharton James from 1897, and it shows two European American men explaining the function of a camera to two Navajo men who are standing in front of a horse. And so this is a wonderful photograph that explains the complex attitudes that we have had about photography and the fears that many Native peoples have of photography and the camera, as well as our own Western view that cameras are naive and harmless instruments. It really points to the complexity of life in New Mexico and that combination of the simplicity of horse-drawn transportation as well as the high technology of a box camera at the end of the 19th century.
Right, right. And there is, of course, reference to Remington without Remington actually being there.
Well, we have a wonderful Fritz Scholder, very expressive lithograph, brightly colored, powerful, simplistic, abstract shapes that parody that work, but transform what was this iconic Western image into a Native image. And I think that's one of the powers of New Mexico art, is our ability to appropriate ideas across cultural divides and transform them and make them our own from our own perspectives.
One of the things that in the entrance to the 14,000 Years of Art in New Mexico show, you have a kind of introductory section, which is basically a kind of like, what is art? What's that all about?
Well, we have a lot of people who come from very different cultural backgrounds who come to the museum. We have people from Asia. We have people from Europe. And people have different attitudes about what art is. And our perspective is a very broad one. And so we define art as an aestheticized object that reflects the maker's worldview. That's very simple, and it allows us to incorporate a whole lot of objects that other more traditional museums might not include in an exhibition like this. At the same time, most people think that an art object is something that an artist makes. In our exhibition, you, the viewer, becomes an artist in many cases. And so when we have an object like a scintillator, which is a high-tech Geiger counter that looks, depending on your age, either like a Buck Rogers ray gun or a hairdryer.
Right.
In reality, it's a high-tech Geiger counter from the 1950s. But you, as the viewer, transform this mechanical object into an object, a work of art, that expresses the complexity of the post-World War II period, of the atomic age, of the Cold War. And so as an object, it becomes very symbolic of the complexity of life at the end of the 20th century.
Did that thing come from the black hole?
No, it didn't. It came from eBay.
You're kidding.
That's another black hole.
This is a little insight into where the New Mexico Museum is acquiring its objects. But one of the things that is really impressive is your permanent collection, and you can draw from that in all of these exhibitions that you do.
Yes, and we have sister institutions that are also state museums. So many of the objects have come from the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture, or they've come from the Museum of International Folk Art, or from the History Museum. We borrowed the stone tools from Eastern New Mexico University, where they have the world's premier Paleo-Indian site called Blackwater Draw. And so we are able to bring together the art of New Mexico from other institutions that have slightly different missions than we do as the State Art Museum.
When you do a show like this, do you get feedback from the public?
It's been wonderful. It has been wonderful. And one of the things that we've done differently in this exhibition is to turn our labels upside down. And so we start off not with who, what, where, and when, but rather, what is this object about? And really ask a question in that first few words that hooks our audience into having to read that label in order to really see the whole point that we are trying to make. And as a result, I've had really very surprisingly supportive response from our visitors.
Very interesting. Now, ladies and gentlemen, when he says we're turning our labels upside down, you don't have to stand on your head. It just
I guess that's true.
It just means the information is at the bottom of about who the painter is and when it was painted and things like that. And I think, again, I mean, for those of us who tend to be more verbal types, text types than visual, having that text accompaniment is so helpful. I just think wall texts in general, if they're well done, are incredibly important parts of the exhibition.
Well, it's difficult to write really good labels that really approach both a not-so-sophisticated art looker, as well as an art professional.
Exactly. Yeah, you're writing for the 9-year-old school children, and you're writing for the art historians, and you're writing for the casual Sunday.
That's it.
Joe Traugott is curator of 20th century art and also 14,000 years ago art.
That's true.
At the New Mexico Museum of Art. The shows are It's About Time, 14,000 Years of Art in New Mexico, which is on display until January 5th of next year, and Back in the Saddle, which is on display until the 15th of September. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. It's been great.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafemc. My email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz. Thanks to Mary Lynn LeBlanc for engineering today. And we will see you tomorrow with the legislative update and, speaking of the arts, hasta la vista. Ciao.